Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it's now or never. And as a matter of fact, it happens to be time to dive into the ratification debates. I've been kind of forewarning you, and I know there's a couple of things I still want to go through on properties and so forth. And as always, we're going to continue Friday, Feedback Friday. And so what we want to do is kind of cover some of the things that we kind of covered this week, as well as things that we needed to cover in Feedback Friday. So if you've got questions, then feel free to give us a call and or send us an email. You call us at 425-270-5416. And if you're looking to just send us an email, it's info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. Now, we're going through the ratification debates because this is where the compact, the Constitution, was broken down line by line and explained as challenges by the anti-federalists were brought forward about the Constitution. They were saying, oh, this thing is evil. It's going to take away all of our liberties. The federal government's going to have all this power to just create all these laws and rule us. And as they went through this, I mean, the anti-federalists pulled all sorts of rabbits out of the hat. And some of the things that they tried to do were, I'll just say, kind of consistent throughout the few states that vigorously debated the Constitution. Now, what we're going to do, first let me kind of cover what we're going to cover. And we're going to cover the first states that kind of rubber stamped the Constitution. Now, in all fairness, after Massachusetts, which I think was around Connecticut time frame or whatever, but once Massachusetts ratified the Constitution, every other state in the Union kind of followed suit with their recommendations of amendments, because what Massachusetts did was, as they went through the Constitution, there was enough reservations by the delegates that they didn't think it would pass. And John Hancock, who was the president of the Massachusetts debate, felt it would, the one time he made a suggestion, I mean, he really tried to, because he was the president of the delegates or the convention. It was his, job to make sure that everybody was doing what they were doing. And he was supposed to be, impartial. And Hancock was a huge, larger-than-life leader in Massachusetts. And so, I mean, when we get to it, you're going to hear, me cite Samuel Adams. Samuel Adams, who, has this revere for this man, Hancock, that he, I'll just say he kind of flatters him, with his excellence and so forth. And so it's interesting how the level of respect that these men had with each other. But nevertheless, it was Samuel Adams that really made, when he heard what Hancock suggested in creating amendments or suggesting amendments. In other words, Hancock recommended that they go ahead and ratify, but he said that he thought that maybe what we should do is make some recommended amendments to the Constitution. And another outlier, we'll get into all the different outliers, but one of the big outliers that you'll notice when we go through, and we hopefully get you encouraged to actually go through these things in their entirety on your own. But with Massachusetts, it was definitely a very spiritual view on the Constitution. The majority of the men there were either reverends and or, you know, way leaders and so forth with the Puritan faith. And so their eyes were very fixed on, you know, whether this be righteous or not. And, you know, they ratified it based on their test. Now, there's some things that they didn't like. But nevertheless, all states that ratified the Constitution after Massachusetts all submitted their recommendations. As a matter of fact, it was brought up in the Virginia ratification debates how Thomas Jefferson didn't like the Constitution without a Bill of Rights. And so it was kind of brought forward that this was Thomas Jefferson's, you know, opinion, that he thought that, you know, we shouldn't ratify it. And so because he was bigger, he was a bigger than life person in Virginia, and Patrick Henry and some of the anti-federalists were, you know, making political hay out of this one letter that he wrote. However, he also wrote a letter after Massachusetts in February. I think it was like March when he wrote this letter, and it was brought up that, hey, he said, you know, I love what Massachusetts did, ratified with recommended amendments. That's even better. And so, you know, they were, the anti-federalists were kind of called out. But what I want to do, actually, because I can go back and forth between all the little, I don't want to call them power plays, but these, you know, special moments during the ratification debates where issues were brought up. What I want to do is I want to help refute what we're going to be going through. And so to be clear, the following states are the states that really did not challenge the Constitution. In other words, the anti-federalists were nary. You know, there's hardly any of them. There just wasn't that kind of resistance in Delaware, in New Jersey, in Georgia, Connecticut, Maryland, New Hampshire, and then Rhode Island. And I just say Rhode Island because Rhode Island did everything they could to stay out of the Union until they said, you know what, it's either we, you know, we either join the Union or they're going to just conquer us. And so Rhode Island ended up joining the Union. And that was actually post the Bill of Rights cycling around. And it was, and I, anyway, they came into the Union right after the Bill of Rights. But anywho. The states that vigorously debated the Constitution was Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, South Carolina, Virginia, New York, and North Carolina. Now, North Carolina just couldn't see ratifying, and at this point in time, they felt that it would be better off to kind of watch what the federal government was going to do because it had already been ratified. They said, you know what, let's kind of look at, you know, how the first year goes. And while that first year was underway, they went ahead and ratified. They ended up joining the Union prior to the, I want to say it was prior to, but I think it was just actually right after the Bill of Rights was presented to Congress as, you know, the recommendations and so forth. Let me go check here. Yeah, it was. It was November 21st when they actually ratified. So it was after the Bill of Rights had kind of gone out for ratification to the states. So anyway, you know, and there's some of these little facts that are interesting asides or interesting supporting information regarding the ratification debates. But the real point here is that you can't understand the Constitution. Nobody can understand the Constitution as you read it on your own, most people say, oh, well, it says what it says. I mean, that sounds really pithy. That sounds, you know, like a really good sound bite. But the fact of the matter is that even the framers themselves, as they put these words down, and even though they kind of made sense, they, as they clarified what each of these lines meant, what each of these clauses meant, as they clarified them, those definitions became legally binding. And so when it comes down to the importance of the ratification debates are actually legal appendages based on contract law. They're legal appendages to the compact. Whenever you go through a compact ratification and you're going, well, what does this line mean? And you turn to the authors and say, you know, we see this line being problematic. We see this and this and this coming out of this. And those men who wrote the Constitution, who were delegates such as Madison, Mason. Now you got to remember, Mason was an anti-federalist. And he was, you know, making wild assertions regarding the Constitution. But when he was pinned down by Madison, he did admit, oh, well, yeah, okay, that, you know, but I still believe we have to have this amendment. So Mason was very guilty of using hyperbole, but it is what it is. And this is why you got to be very careful. When you're reading the ratification debates, are you reading the ratification debates of an anti-federalist who was possibly aggrandizing or making wild assertions or unfounded comments regarding what this part of the Constitution meant? As they said, well, I see it as this. I think that this is what's going to happen. I mean, Patrick Henry, you know, was constantly, you know, making wild assertions and hyperbole and, you know, trying to get the delegates to, you know, challenge and not accept this Constitution. And so what we're going to do when we come back is I'm actually going to read the arguments in the Federalist Papers, or I should say Madison's argument regarding the exceeding of their commission. This is critical. Because really, when it came down to it, as these states debated this, well, I don't want to bleed into it. We'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so this is the Federalist Paper number 40, and this is, again, Madison's response to the Anti-Federalists in making this assertion that this Constitution is invalid, this Constitution is unauthorized, and that the delegates at the Constitutional Convention exceeded their commission. And so this is what Madison stated. The powers of the convention ought, in strictness, to be determined by an inspection of the commissions given to the members by their respective constituents. As all of these, however, had reference, either to the recommendation from the meeting at Annapolis in September 1786 or to that from Congress in February 1787, it will be sufficient to recur to these particular acts. The Act from Annapolis recommends the, quote, appointment of commissioners to take into consideration the situation of the United States to devise such further provisions as shall appear to them necessary under the Constitution of the federal government adequate to the exigencies of the Union, and to report such an act for that purpose to the United States in Congress assembled, as we agreed to them, and afterwards confirmed by the legislature of every state, will effectually provide for the same, close quote. The recommendatory act of Congress in the words following, quote, whereas there is a provision in the Articles of Confederation and Perpetual Union for making alterations therein by the assent of a Congress of the United States and of the legislatures of the several states, and whereas experience hath evinced that there are defects in the present Confederation as a mean to remedy which several of the states, and particularly the state of New York, by express instructions to their delegates in Congress, have suggested a convention for the purposes expressed in the following resolution, and such convention appearing to the most probable mean of establishing in these states a firm national government. Quote, resolved that in the opinion of Congress it is expedient that on the second Monday of May, next a convention of the delegates who shall have been appointed by the several states be held at Philadelphia for the sole and express purpose of revising the Articles of Confederation and reporting to Congress and the several legislatures such alterations and provisions therein as shall, when agreed to in Congress and confirmed by the states, render the federal Constitution adequate to the exigencies of government and to the preservation of the Union. From these two acts, this is Madison again, from these two acts, it appears first that the object of the convention was to establish in these states a firm national government. Second, that this government was to be such as would be adequate to the exigencies of government and the preservation of the Union. Third, that these purposes were to be affected by alterations and provisions in the Articles of Confederation, as it is expressed in the Act of Congress, or by such further provisions as should appear necessary, as it stands in the Recommendatory Act from Annapolis forth, that the alterations and provisions were to be reported to Congress and to the states in order to be agreed to by the former and confirmed by the latter. Now, it goes through and he talks, you know, a lot more about the Articles of Confederation and the problems and so forth. And what he also does is he also goes through the Articles of Confederation line by line here. And he identifies how they use the exact same words. I mean, they literally cut. They didn't have the ability to cut and paste back those days. But they literally cut and pasted, you know, the text of the Articles of Confederation into the new Constitution. So that, you know, they were basically proving that they were trying to keep as close to the essence of the Articles of Confederation while giving the federal government, this new government, more energy to be able to do and fulfill its responsibilities as the general government for the states of the Confederacy. The interesting thing is many of these men, after the Constitution was ratified, they never really referred to the United States as a national government. And when I say the United States, I'm not talking about the federal. I'm talking about the group in its entirety. They never looked at it as a single government. They looked at it as a confederacy. Thomas Jefferson, during his presidency, referred to the republic as a confederacy because there were very few powers that were delegated and granted to the federal government. And so where we're at now is we're now looking at, you know, what did they really do? And, you know, did they actually violate their commission? And Madison clearly says that they didn't. More importantly, when it came time in many of the states, and I do know for a fact that Virginia, Patrick Henry refused to actually have the convention kick off the ratification process. He demanded that they resolve the question of whether they exceeded their commission or not. And he demanded that the body of the whole, all of the delegates that were elected, he wanted them to vote on whether they did or didn't. And they voted that they didn't. In other words, by a democratic process, they settled the argument of whether the Convention of Philadelphia, the Constitutional Convention in 1787, whether they exceeded their commission or not. And so we will find out when we go through the Virginia ratification debates, we're going to actually find these little lines where I can't believe we're going back to, you know, challenging this Constitution because somebody's claiming that they exceeded their commission. We've already settled this. And this is said, I believe, by Pendleton. I believe Madison brings it up several times, you know, and he keeps on going, The other thing, when they actually kicked off the convention in Virginia, it was identified that they wanted to go through it line by line by line by line so that they could argue each of the lines full in their entirety, you know, going back and forth and, you know, letting both sides kind of debate that one line before they went to the next line. So this way they would go systematically through the Constitution. Well, it didn't take long for the anti-federalists to start trying to leap forward and point to something that they wanted to make hay out of. Or it wasn't uncommon during the ratification debates of Virginia, where they already covered something like the Necessary and Proper Clause, and they would try to bring it up because they thought of a new angle of getting people to look at it, well, this way. And, you know, this is when, you know, Madison would also say, you know, we've already covered this. Why are you bringing this up again? And so, you know, the respect that these men had for each other, because, you know, he could have easily said, you know, why don't you, had he probably told Patrick Henry or whoever it was that was doing it, why don't you just grow up? We've already covered that topic and you just keep bringing it up over and over again. Just shut up. But they didn't do that. It was always, well, the honorable gentleman, and, you know, they were always referring to each other with respect. And that was because, my friends, at this point in time, the way a person could refute or actually, you know, claim that you've impugned their character, you've insulted them, they could challenge you to a duel and, next thing you know, one of you is not walking back into the delegate room, back into the convention for ratifying the Constitution. So anyway, what I want to do is we want to go through the Delaware ratification debates. And it's kind of important that we do this because, you know, Delaware was the very first, right? They were the first ones to rubber stamp the Constitution. And it's very, very short. I think it's a single page. Yeah, it's literally a single page. And they identify the three counties. See, Delaware only had three counties. And oh, by the way, Delaware was around 60,000 people at the time. Now, the real reason why Delaware had no reservations about the Constitution is that they looked at this Constitution as protecting their sovereignty so that as a small state, they would never lose their equal suffrage in the Senate, and that, you know, over the issues that were important to state governing, that they would maintain their sovereignty as well, that they wouldn't be sucked into this, you know, this living constitution hell, excuse the expression, but they wouldn't be sucked into this aggrandizing of federal powers so that the federal powers would usurp everything. The way the Constitution was designed, these men who, you know, went to that Constitutional Convention came back. And as a matter of fact, it was Delaware, I believe it was Delaware, that stated after they had basically challenged the Virginia plan, they said, look, you know, we're not going to accept this Virginia plan. We'd just rather just keep the Articles of Confederation. And people go, are you kidding me? Why would you do that? And this is, you know, this was their basic response. Because we don't trust you. And so it was right there. This is the reason why Delaware had no reservations whatsoever regarding the Constitution. They saw it as a true protector of their state sovereignty from the bigger states and from foreign states as well. Anyway, we'll be right back with the Delaware ratification debates right after this.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Moby Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so so Delaware ratifies the Constitution on December 7th. So, well, the Constitution was signed and sent back to Continental Congress on the 17th of September. So the 17th of October is 1 month. September or October, November, it's another month. So we're looking at 2.5 months. 2.5 months after the Constitutional Convention signed the Constitution and sent it back to Continental Congress, Delaware had already had their election. They already elected their delegates of the three counties, and they have the lists of everybody here. And so, well, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 from each county. So there was a total of 30 delegates to the ratification debates. And so they already had their elections, so the nominees were thrown out there. And these 30 men represented the 60,000 citizens of Delaware. Now, when you think about it, how many times do you hear people say that this is our Constitution, we ratified this? Actually, they didn't. This was only 30 people that ratified it for the 60,000 in Delaware. And so, understanding a Republican form of government, the people did not take a vote on whether they were going to accept or reject the Constitution. They chose delegates to go to a convention and debate it and consider it, and representing them decide yay or nay to ratify or not. And so this is really important, friends. This is really, really important so that you understand that this was done in a Republican form. This was not done in a Democratic form. Even though there were elections where, you know, one would see a democracy, it was done by representation of the people of the what? The counties. In other words, the counties were defined by the state, and those counties sent delegates to represent them in accepting this federal compact. And so when we go through some of the other states, you're going to see the same things. And you're going to, oh my, this is interesting. You can't tell me how important counties are. I recognize that the county is the fundamental base government in this republic. And I can't emphasize this enough. Now, what we have here is this ratification on 7 December, and it's basically says this: we, the deputies of the people of the Delaware State, in convention met, having taken into our serious consideration the federal constitution proposed and agreed upon by the deputies of the United States in a general convention held at the city of Philadelphia on the 17th day of September in the year of our Lord 1787, have approved, assented to, ratified, and confirmed, and by these presents do, by these people present, do in virtue of the power and authority to us given for that purpose, and for in behalf of ourselves and our constituents, fully, freely, and entirely approve of, assent to, ratify, and confirm the said Constitution. Now, what we have here is, I have no idea how long they deliberated. Maybe it was a week. Maybe it was, you know, a week and a half, whatever. All we have is the final byproduct. In other words, they sat down, and it probably took them a day to come up with what the language would be and how they were going to write this up and sign this document so that everybody, you know, could sign it. In other words, you know, what are we going to agree upon? And that's what they did. So what happened before this, and where's the dialogue? Where are the notes of that convention? Well, I don't have them. Was there any dialogue? Did they even consider? Did they even have an anti-federalist who was trying to challenge the veracity of the convention? Well, it was so overwhelming that they all agreed on ratifying it. It almost seems like they did so unanimously. In other words, there wasn't one person that dissented and said, you know what, I think we could do better. And so what we have here is we have a final document, but we don't have the actual debates. There's no doubt in my mind that there was proceedings and so forth. They had to, you know, come to quorum and all of that. And so this is where this thing called the Documentation History of the Ratification of the Constitution, which was done by the University of Wisconsin, the DHRC, I believe that having that, if somebody wants to, you know, bestow a gift upon me, give me those, because they have all of the documents, the newspapers, the letters that these delegates sent back home while they were in convention of the ratifying process, all of that. And so as we look at, you know, the ratification process, we would probably be able to garner a little bit more because, again, in some ways, some of this other documentation never came forward. until probably the University of Wisconsin did all the research and dug it all up and went through all the different archives at the state and national level and so forth. But for what it's worth, Delaware was the first state to ratify. Now, I do not believe they were the first state to convene. I believe Pennsylvania was the first state to actually have elections. And then, you know, they heavily debated the Constitution. And actually, I was just pulling up Georgia, but I realized that what we need is New Jersey. So, because New Jersey was the next state to actually ratify the Constitution. They ratified it on December 18th. But anyway, you know, Philadelphia, they had a pretty heated debate. Pretty heated. And so when we go through the Philadelphia ratification debates, we'll kind of point some things out for you, because what we have are the responses to the anti-federalist assertions. And so this, it's another unique debate that, you know, we have, that we don't have the full debates available. Anyway, we'll get into that when we hit that. But New Jersey actually had quite a few different counties. They had 13 counties. And they only had a few delegates from each county. Now, because New Jersey was, I think, a little bit more populated, but not by much, New Jersey's population was 184,000. And so if I counted, because it was 30 out of the 60, and if I count how many they had here, it's probably pretty close to 30 that was representing 180,000. So I don't have it all counted, and I hope you forgive me for that. But more importantly, I'm just trying to give you, you know, the bigger picture that the Constitution was not read and not, you know, debated by we the people. It was who we the people trusted with these issues. We the people were probably more illiterate and more ignorant and so forth on these types of things. And the, you know, the Constitution, as it was ratified and accepted, it then became, you know, kind of familiarized. But it was more familiarized regarding the Bill of Rights than what the Constitution really said. And it's kind of interesting because Alexis de Tocqueville talks about the Constitution and how even though the people didn't really understand it, they understood the issues, the substance of the Constitution, its essence. So anyway, this ratification notification that was written by the state of New Jersey was basically presented in a very similar fashion, but there was a little bit more words to it. So you can probably tell that these men debated a little bit more, and they said, I think there's some more important things we need to put into this document. And so as they, you know, were in convention, they felt, you know, let's earn our keep and let's make it seem like at least, you know, we just didn't rubber stamp the thing. Anyway, it starts off, whereas a convention of delegates from the following states, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Connecticut, New Jersey, Delaware, Maryland, Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Georgia met at the Philadelphia for the purpose of deliberating and forming a constitution for the United States of America, finished their session on the 17th day of September last, and agreed upon. And whereas Congress on the 28th day of September, 11 days later, unanimously did resolve that the said report from the resolutions and letter accompany the same be transmitted to the several legislatures in order to be submitted to a convention of delegates chosen in each state by the people thereof in conformity to the resolves of the convention made and provided in that case. So this is kind of interesting because they're giving you a little bit more of a history on, you know, how they got here, and whereas Congress, and whereas the legislature of this state did on the 29th day of October last resolve in the words following, resolved unanimously that it will be recommended to such an inhabitants of this state as are entitled to vote for representatives in General Assembly to meet in their respective counties on the fourth day Tuesday. And anyway, we'll finish this up when we come back from the break. I don't want to bleed into it. But this is kind of where you're seeing that these things were being done unanimously by the people when, you know, the states, well, why should we accept this? Because it protects our sovereignty and it creates a national government can actually do its job. We'll be right back after this.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so we're gonna be flying through these first few states. And I just say that because there's really not a lot here other than the fact there's, you know, some of the little historical asides that I'm covering. There's just, you know, these men recognized what this Constitution was going to do. It was going to protect their people. It was going to protect their state legislature. And it was going to create a national government that had enough power to be able to actually pay its debt, its legitimate debt, you know, that it could take on debt to fight wars and to do very specific things. And so when it did take debt, then it basically had to pay that debt off. Well, to pay that debt off, it needed to be able to go to the states and have the states pay in a species or in a currency that had value. One of the problems with the Articles of Confederation were, you know, each of the states had their own currency, and that each of the states, you know, basically devalued their currency so that they didn't have to pay their debt. And so anyway, let me go on. That it be recommended to such of the inhabitants of this state as are entitled to vote for representatives in General Assembly to meet in their respective counties on the fourth Tuesday in November next at the several places fixed by law for holding the annual elections to choose 3 suitable persons to serve as delegates from each county in a state convention for the purposes herein before mentioned, and that the same be conducted agreeably to the mode and comfortably and with the rules and regulations prescribed for conducting such elections, and then resolved unanimously that the person so elected to serve in state convention do assemble and meet together on the second day in Tuesday next at Trenton in the county of Hunterdon, Blah, 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 blah. Anyway, resolved that the sheriffs in the respective counties of this state shall be, and they are hereby required to give as timely notice as may be by the advertisements to the people of their counties of the time, place, and purpose of holding election as aforesaid. And then they kind of go through this, and then they go through, you know, this whole thing. And then done, this is the point I want to get to. Done in convention by the unanimous consent of the members present this 18th day of December in the year of our Lord 1787 and of the independence of the United States of America, the 12th, in witness whereof we have hereunto subscribed our names. And then they sign these things. And so unanimously, I wanted to point this out. They actually said that they unanimously accepted this Constitution, folks. There wasn't one dissenting voice. Now, maybe there was somebody that was being pragmatic and, you know, kind of talking a bit, but I would have loved to have seen the debates at the beginning of these states as, you know, we kind of look at these things to say, you know, how many people were really complaining, you know, going into these ratification debates, especially in these smaller states that, you know, I don't want to say they were more honorable, but they were obviously not fiefdoms where there were cabals of power because they were able to wield more power. Now, understanding, you know, that people follow the money, I would presume that where there were cabals, that means that there were people that were using and peddling influence in persuading people to go one way or the other. And so this is why in those bigger, more populated, more financially, I'll just say developed, I don't want to say, you know, corrupt or what, but obviously there was a level of affluence and influence in doing everything they could to protect their little fiefdom of power, the cabals that, you know, were operating in these states. And so, you know, there were probably, you know, foreign influences in these things. Folks, I mean, America was open. America was, you know, obviously, you know, ambassadors and so forth were here. I mean, we read about that. The French were coming and going. And, you know, there was a little head scratching when they, you know, weren't getting their debt paid as well. You know, and they're going, huh, you know, this is kind of bad. The reality, I've said this before, and I can't emphasize enough, that as the new government was moving forward, this, you know, this concept of paying the debt became very real and present. As so when we were starting to pay the debt and when France began its revolution, folks, I can't tell you what a godsend that was, because Napoleon, as he rose to power in the 1790s, there's no doubt in my mind, Napoleon would have came to the Americas and our history would have been a lot different had we not created this constitutional republic and been able to pay that debt. Because we were paying that debt, I think Napoleon was pretty quick to actually concede in selling us that land. And not that we were necessarily allies and friends, but more to the fact that, you know, he didn't want it to go to one of his enemies. And so because he was creating enemies in Europe. And so it's fascinating when we really look at what a godsend this Constitution was, what truly a blessing it was to this republic. So as we wrap up with New Jersey, then the next step or next state that we want to cover is Georgia. Now, Georgia is an equally longer document, and they ratified the Constitution on the 2nd of January 1788. in convention Wednesday, January the 2nd, 1788, to all whom these presents shall come greeting. Whereas the form of a constitution for the government of the United States of America was on the 17th day of September. They kind of go through the history and how it kind of moved forward, whereas the legislature of Georgia did on the 26th day of October, 1787, in pursuance of the above recited resolution of Congress, resolved that a convention be elected on the day of the next general election, and in that same manner as representatives are elected, and that the said convention consists of not more than 3 members of each county. Now, again, in Delaware, it was 10 members of each county, where, like New Jersey, was going to be 3 members of each county. Let me see here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Now, Georgia had 3 members of all 10 counties, and Georgia had around 60,000 people. So, in other words, the people of Delaware and the people of Georgia had better representation than the people of New Jersey. What do I mean by that? Well, there were 30 delegates in both Delaware, and there were 30 delegates in Georgia, and there were just a little over 30. I think it was like maybe 40 delegates that was in New Jersey. But New Jersey, they had, I mean, if you look at how many delegates represented 180,000 versus 60, I mean, New Jersey was 3 times the population. So one representative represented a lot more people. And so people were a little better represented in Delaware and Georgia. Just trying to give you the nuances between these things. Now, and again, as I look at this, we got basically just a minute left. And again, as they go through this, know ye all that we, the delegates of the people of the state of Georgia in convention, met pursuant to the resolutions of the legislature aforesaid, having taken into serious consideration this Constitution, have assented to, ratified, and adopted these presents, do in virtue and power and authority to us given by the people of the said state for that purpose, for and on behalf of ourselves and our constituents, fully and entirely assent to, ratify, and adopt the said Constitution. Now, they don't use the words unanimous here, nor did they use the words unanimous in Delaware, but we have no idea how it went. You know, how did everybody vote and so forth? I guess that would be, you know, one of those trivia questions that would need to be researched by detail. And, you know, the guy to do this, Keith Broders. Keith Broders provides all sorts of details and insights, you know, like how many people voted in the very first election, how were the electors chosen, you know, and so forth from each of the states in the very first presidential, the second, and so forth. But anyway, so we've got 3 states down, 3 states down, but these states were pretty much rubber stamping. We've got, you know, a few more states that will be rubber stamping, and then we're going to move forward. But remember that the states that rubber stamped even after Massachusetts still submitted recommended amendments. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.